Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners are warned that the following podcast program may contain stories, names and voices of deceased persons.
This is Outback Out Loud.
People and stories from Outback New South Wales.
The most amazing little town there could ever be. I love it.
I left to come out west and I came out Jillaroo-ing at Warren. And from there, that's where I started my love affair again with the Western Plains, and I've never left Western Plains from there.
It's a great little spot to live.
You know, just everything about Louth I love.
Just home as far as I'm concerned.
Outback Out Loud!
That's what I like.
Welcome to Outback Out Loud.
In this season, we explore stories and life experiences from the most remote centres in New South Wales.
Let's hear from historian Dr. Mary-Ann Jebb about Nymagee.
Nymagee is a small rural town in western New South Wales, located 89 kilometres south of Cobar and approximately 7.5 hours drive west of Sydney. Today, Nymagee has a population of approximately 110 residents. The town is in the traditional lands of Nyampa people, specifically the Wangabon and the Wailwan. Nymagee's climate is hot and dry for much of the year. Rainfall is low and unreliable, often falling in irregular storms. The environment is dominated by open woodland, mulga and cypress pine, and wide grasslands, but drought, overgrazing and the heavy demands of copper mining era left their mark on the landscape. Seasonal creeks and dams were crucial for settlement, and water scarcity has always been a defining challenge for life and work at Nymagee. European contact around Nymagee began in the 1830s and 40s, when explorers such as Thomas Mitchell passed through the Darling and Bogan River country. Pastoral settlement followed quickly, with squatters taking up large sheep and cattle runs on the open grasslands traditionally used by Nyampa people. By the 1850s and 60s, stations like Nymagee, Gilgunya, and adjoining runs were established, often bringing conflict over land and water. Surviving Aboriginal families stayed in the area working the large unfenced pastoral runs. Families were able to continue many traditional practices and maintain their language. By 1900, Aboriginal people made up 30% of the pastoral workforce, but it was casual or seasonal, and pay was less than Europeans received. In the 1920s, many Nyampa Aboriginal people moved to the edge of towns to camp, where they could find some employment and send children to school. With droughts and the economic depression of the 1930s, life became very difficult for many Aboriginal people who were no longer welcome to live full-time on pastoral stations. The government and police tried to move people away from town camps to the government Aboriginal stations at Brewarrina and further north. But this attempt failed, and most Nyampa families returned after a few years to towns in the region to live in camps. The people of Nymagee and the police were involved in the capture of one notorious bushranger, Thomas Jones, alias Brewer, alias Tommy the Ambler. According to the local newspapers in 1882, 5-foot-tall Tommy the Ambler threatened the town of Nymagee. He had escaped from Burke Jail, where he was serving a sentence for horse stealing, and hid out in the region between Gilargambone and Nymagee. He allegedly cut the telegraph wire between Cobar and Burke to stop police communicating. People in the Nymagee region and the police were concerned he might be forming a gang like the Kelly Gang to rob the local banks. Newspapers reported that Tommy the Ambler had many friends in the region, and one of them was Wild Wright. Rumours abounded that the wanted man had been seen in many different places. These turned out to be false and were allegedly made by his friends to police to put them off the track. Police from all nearby stations were sent to the area. For 2 weeks they scoured the area, eventually coming across Tommy near the Cobar Gilargambone Road, riding a tall chestnut horse. The local paper reported constables Chaseling, Cameron and Atkinson, the latter said to be a splendid shot, kept their rifles in readiness to prevent a surprise. Suddenly, as if by magic, Bougainvillea, the tracker, pointed. Simultaneously, the police and the escapee caught sight of each other. Tommy the Ambler was alone. There was no wild right or other desperadoes, only the one contemptible, small but squarely built individual, Jones. They challenged him to stop and fired a shot above his head, but apparently he was on the other side of the heavy fence and got away. The newspaper story continued. As the echo of the rifle was dying out, could be heard the laugh and chuckle of the bushranger as if mocking his pursuers. The police party cleared the old wooden fence, but were stopped again by another fence. One police horse refused to jump it with a rider, so the policeman jumped it himself, followed by the horse. After a few hours galloping 16 kilometres in boggy conditions, Senior Constable Piggott caught up with Tommy the Ambler, who was armed, and he gave up and was taken to Bathurst Prison.
Here's the local mailman, Ron.
Yeah, Ron Townsend. I run the mail out to Nymagee and beyond three days a week, but only 2 days on the long run, yeah, it's called, yeah. Well, the mail run, we collected in Hermodale and from the post office, and then out I go and then deliver it all the way to Nymagee and then out to Cuttings and then out to Piney and then out to Westerns, where I'm going to now. So, yeah, I'm 6 hours on the long run, providing I don't stop by and yakking to this old fella. And, the other time it's only 3 hours, yeah. If anybody's moving stuff from one station to another, we'll deliver it, yeah. Pick it up at their mailbox and then we'll take it on to wherever, yeah. It doesn't have to go through the post, yeah. Since everybody's online now, it's been very good. Like everybody's parcels and everything come through the mail, yeah. At Christmas time and times like that, I get, you know, beer and chocolates and cake, biscuits, whatever in the mailbox, yeah. I was born in Ningen, but I went to Sydney and I was into skip game business. And then the big knobs, like the big boys, they pushed me out, tipping fees and all that sort of stuff. So I retired and come back home, or come back to Hermodale. But funny thing about it is my old mate, like at school and whatever, his stepson bought the mail run. And when I came back, I was going to retire, but only get a bit of tractor work and stuff like that, you know. And he met him in the pub and he said, "You're not retiring, boy. I'll see you on Monday morning." So the way I went, yeah.
The heart and soul of Nymagee is the CWA and its annual flower show. We find out more down at the CWA Hall.
I'm Beverly Ellison. We are at the Nymagee CWA rooms. Prior to having a meeting for our flower show, I came into Nymagee. We came in after we'd been shearing, and our next door neighbour said, "Come in and have a look at the flower show." Well, I laughed my head off. Who would grow flowers out here? It was a desert. When I came in, it was absolutely beautiful. You'd never seen so many flowers in the hall over here, and I was astounded. I joined CWA. Mrs. Reed then was the president, and that was 1994. I have been vice president for a few years. I was the junior when I joined. I wasn't the junior, but I was one of the youngest. Meeting in Dubbo, I think Mrs. Betts couldn't go, so she decided I'd go in her place to go to the annual general, and it was unreal what CWA does, what pushes it. They push the government to what they can really, you know, it's they're involved in. I was culture officer, been culture officer for years, doing craft and vase out there. That's sticker parch. And that's the sort of things, I do a lot of painting on saws and to enter into our flower show and to sell on the stall. It's been very good because you mix with other people. And they mightn't all, you know, some have had really hardships, a lot of them. And they never ever whinge about it. You never hear them complain. and you can make good friends with it, and not only just here, but everywhere when you go on, you meet them. I met people at Sojourner that was in the CWA there, so I went to some of their meetings. Dolly Betts was our handicraft, and Di Roach, not here, she passed away, wanted me to paint and do things, and I said, I can't do this. Well, you know what, I've painted swords. I do fancy work, I've done that for years. And some of the stuff, it's an achievement, really beautiful. We were taught when we were young, because nighttime, you didn't have TV, you had a wireless, you weren't allowed to touch. So you were taught to knit or do fancy work. I wish I'd learned to crochet.
The ladies at Nimijie CWA are displaying beautiful ribbons around their neck. I asked for a bit more info.
We got a long service one. Jolly and I got presented with it at Donna's for Christmas.
Yep. It's just a sash that we wear with all of our ribbons. We all have roles. So there's a catering officer, there's publicity officer, there's all different things, president, vice president, 100 years commemorative badge.
75, 90 years.
Yep, you've got them all, Doll. So Doll's fairly laden down with hers because she's got so many.
Could you get a second ribbon?
Well, I think the new thing is now you get a cord and put it around your neck. Yep. They get a bit heavy hanging down like this. I'm Dolly Betts. I grew up in Nimijie.
How long have you been a member of the CWA?
Oh, since the late early 60s, I think. About 1965. Oh, we're a not-for-profit organisation, but we have an annual flower show every year, which is a great day. And we do catering. If we need to put on a cup of tea or anything, we do it for an organisation or something. Well, I think years ago, when it was first formed, it was just to get the Outback ladies all together that they could meet and have a day out. And now they're a real organisation to be reckoned with the government and everything. Gwen might be better informed about the CWA because she's been the treasurer for a lot of years. But anyway.
Not really. I think you're the best anyway. Okay. I'll just sit here and listen.
You can chime in a little bit if you feel like you want to. That's fine.
Thank you.
Can you two tell me the history of the flower show?
It goes way back, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. We had our 50th year when I was president tonight, and so it's been going for over 50 years, a flower show. Well, everyone brings in their produce and their wool and their handicraft and flowers. And
Cooking. It's kind of a big day for around about the area, isn't it?
Mm, we have the old fuel burners, they call themselves. I think that all the old cars come out. And we have stalls. Mostly have music.
It's a bit of a surprise, really, because you think that there's not going to be many flowers, but even from the old photos, everyone seems to really get involved, and even from as far Nimijie and, Ningen and Cobar, they all bring their flowers. There's no entry fee or anything. And then we have... trophies at the end, which is usually a gift of some description or a monetary prize, and it's good for the community, isn't it?
Oh, you can have lunch.
It's a village fate fair type of feeling, yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely not just flowers. So anyone that's coming thinking it's just going to be a paper flowers and it's a really girly thing, no, we're trying to get away from that. We want to incorporate as many different stalls and appeal to as many people as we possibly can. Kids, men, women.
Everything. So previously we've had antique car shows and working dog trials and just different interest things. So it's just who we can get involved with at the time.
There's so many categories, like you can go for a single bloom, multiple bloom, hydrangeas. There is pretty much whatever you think of any kind of flower, you'll get it into a category. There's a bit of artificial, there's purely green, wildflowers. Yeah, pretty much anything. Even Darb enters a flower pretty much every year. Yeah, you could be overall winner on the day and walk away with $100 or whatever it is. So, yeah, it's not bad.
And the glory.
The bragging rights.
Yes, my next door neighbour won the chocolate cake last year. So afterwards she brought it out and we had afternoon tea with the winning chocolate cake from Nimijie CWA Flower Show. But she had to admit that it was the only chocolate cake in the thing at the end of the day. But it was still the winning one and it was great.
I did that with my scones one year. I entered scones and they came first. And so it's been, every time we have shearing at their award winning scones.
The little bit of competition and that, we won at Nimijie sort of bragging rights.
Here's Katie and her grandmother Jenny talking about reinvigorating social activities in Nimijie.
I'm Katie Nicholson. We are in the small town Nimijie, New South Wales.
I'm Jenny Nicholson. Have lived in the small village of Nimijie for 51 years. Come from Melbourne. And Nimijie, of course, has been the home of my family and still is, and my husband's family, since 1910.
How did you find yourself here?
That's a question that everyone asks when they hear that I come from Melbourne. My girlfriend and I, we're a teacher's college. We wanted to go somewhere different for our holiday break. Took the train, Southern Aurora, to Sydney. Then the trains, Silver City Comet, which used to go to Broken Hill, to a little place called Matakana. Now, being young and innocent like we were, we expected a station at Matakana, and we said to the guard, we need to get off at Matakana. I said, okay, right, no problems. I'll let you know. So Matakana turned out to be this little siding. The train stopped. We got out. Nothing, no one there. And next minute, Michael's uncle gave us a big wave. So that was our introduction to this area. Michael's mother and his auntie got together. Let's organise a couple of girls in the district. Let's organise a picnic. So we went to Michael's home and he would say, I came knocking on his door, as you do. So we went for a picnic up in the hills and that's where we first met. That's the beginning of the story. And about, I finished teaching, taught 3 years, went overseas, came back and in 1974 we were married. He proposed to me over the Yarra River and said, now mind you, there'll be no fresh bread. Little did he tell me, there's no power, which I knew already because I'd been up there. No power. We had a 32-volt generator. We had a gas iron. I had a kickstart washing machine and all the things that, you know, people say, oh, the good old days. Well, I'm glad we've moved from the good old days. So that's how we first met.
So my mother and father met when Dad was at Yanko. Mum's father was the principal at Yanko and they've been high school sweethearts since Mum was 16. Then they moved out here and Mum was the principal at the primary school up here before it shut down. And then I was born and I've lived here since I was little. We moved to town when I was about 10, Mum and my younger brother and sister, so that we could do after school activities and everything and experience a bit more of town life and see all of our friends a bit more. And then I've recently finished school last year and then I've moved out here to work for the family business. Yeah.
And as a kid, what was it like moving from the farm to town?
It was a bit of a different experience. Looking back, I miss like being out here a lot, but also too, I feel like I experienced a lot of stuff in town. Like I got to meet a lot of people. I got to experience cricket and dance and netball and did a bit of everything. Last year, I got the privilege of becoming president of the Gymkhana committee here. So I'm really hoping that that can continue to kick on and really grow into something big and a good local event that everyone comes to. I'm really passionate about bringing people together. I love organising things and I love having something to work towards. So every time, like, it gets me really excited. I know it's so much work to put on, and so, like, the community is great to help put it on, but every year I'm like, okay, what can we do that's better? Like, I just love bringing people together and giving them all something that everyone can enjoy. It's something that anyone can come and find something that they like.
Katie did a fantastic job in organising the being responsible for the Gymkhana. In the 2 years she's been involved, she may be my granddaughter, I'm very proud of her, but in the 2 years she has been involved in that, it has grown, and from 1 day to 2 days this last year, and are just, and people coming from as far as Broken Hill, you know, all the local areas, and I can just see it growing as the years go on, which is something very special for a small community such as Nimijie, which when you look around, there's not much happening, but it makes you think that it's possible. In my early days, there seemed to be lots of things happening, and then there was sort of a lull, but now there sort of seems to be another vibe happening.
Yes.
So I feel optimistic about what lies ahead for our little village.
Like in the last 2 years or so, everyone's tried to get more things happening and bring everyone together a bit more to start socialising, like back in the old days, how everyone would come in and see each other.
Just recently we've had the Gymkhana. We had a spring ball last year that we literally had to knock people away with a stick. We took a gamble because a ball isn't something that small communities seem to be doing much, and it was a fantastic success. And we're going to have an autumn ball next year. And we're such a mobile society. You know, young kids, young people, they've got the utes, they've got a swag. It's easy to, or it's different. Or it's, as Katie said, you know, we haven't been out that way. So let's get in the ute, let's take the swag, or there's something on, you know, let's go somewhere we haven't been. Our family is still here, contributing to the community, working hard. We've went through some really hard times, but here we are, very, very lucky to be where we are, and proud of the fact that we are still making it.
Okay, my name's David Hill, commonly known as Des. I grew up in the bush. My early days were in the bush. My father was in local government, therefore we moved from place to place. But at the very young age of 12, I was sent to boarding school. So the rest of my life, up until about the age of 40 plus, I spent in the large city of Sydney, and then I came here.
How did you arrive here from Sydney?
Well, mainly through misfortune. I was working in Sydney, eventually I decided that I had enough of the city. So a friend of mine and I decided that we were going to go on an adventure and buy a hotel, which we did. We bought a pub, very large pub, in a semi-rural area. Unfortunately, we lost a lot of money, didn't do very well. But then we decided that we were just going to look for something cheaper. So for 12 months, we sort of explored around country New South Wales, of which one was the Nimijie Hotel. And after a lot of thinking, we chose to buy a roof.
And how long were you at the pub for?
We had the pub for about 6 years. Then my business partner fell in love, so they chose to leave town and go their merry way. And I had to make a decision about whether I chose to do at that stage. And I chose to stay. And the opportunities arose where I worked for local cockies, doing sort of labouring, working in sheds, brush cutting, mainly outdoor stuff. And I did that for a period of about 25 odd years. Then I retired, and then I had to make another choice. My life has been full of choices by the look of things. Whether I chose to stay in Nimijie or whether I chose to look for alternative residencies. and I chose to stay here. And I find the whole experience pleasurable, would you believe? I'm now 75. I've been here for about 30 plus years. It's the type of place where you can experience interactions with other people in a more, I guess, depth way. That you, in fact, you can choose to become involved on a community basis, on an individual basis, or if you choose to, you can live your own life and become isolated. Most country pubs originally, and should be, the lifeblood of the community. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the interaction. We were able to encourage people to participate in what was going on in the village. It was my role, I guess, to encourage that, to facilitate that, and to present a face that was warm, understanding, and I guess joyful, if you like, so that people would come and respond, yes.
Thanks for listening. To hear more amazing stories from Outback New South Wales, check out the whole Outback Out Loud series, now streaming everywhere.
We acknowledge and celebrate the first Australians on whose traditional lands we meet and work, and whose cultures are among the oldest continuing cultures in human history.
Please like, subscribe, rate us, and write a review. The Outback Out Loud podcast was designed and produced by Signal Creative.
Season 4 of Outback Out Loud has been made by Outback Arts. You can find Outback Arts at outbackarts.com.au or on Facebook and Instagram. This season was made possible with funding support from the Regional Arts Fund. On-ground support this season came from Marnie Vaughan and Andrew Hull. Outback Out Loud Season 4 was researched, consulted, recorded, and edited by Emma Hoy. Thank you to everyone who's been involved over the last 5 years.